We're a little out of practice, so please forgive. We'll give it our best shot. A long time ago, all stories should start with a long time ago when the world was young, the ancient times we're talking. So my long time ago was about 3 months ago when we left off our reading. A long time ago when the world was young, before we went to India, we were just starting chapter Skanda 7 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Before starting, Om Mangalam Guru Devaya Devi Matriksha Mangalam Mangalam Bhakta Vrindevi Sarva Lokaya Mangalam Om Sara Shiva Samaram Bam Shankara Charam Ajama Mashmara Charaprayantam Vande Gurum Param. And the section we were starting, the conversation between, I think, Yudhisthira and Narada Muni is where seven skandhas are. It's been a long time. I'm pretty sure this is what's happening. And Yudhisthira is asking questions. It seems sometimes that the Lord acts partially. This is the question. This is the external question, the cause for this conversation, that the Lord sometimes seems to be partial. He's an example. As Ram, he kills Ravana, right? Why he kills one person and saves another person? Why he kills Kamsa and saves Draupadi, right? So they seem to have favorites. He only likes his devotees and not his enemies. It seems. And so one of the qualities of the Lord, he should be impartial. He's the self of all. He's the same everywhere. There should be no favorites, right? Simply by pleasing him, you get benefits, and if you don't please him, you get punished. This doesn't seem to be the highest principle of religion, right? Many religions hold like this. Actually, if you don't please God, you get punished by God, right? You either get like this. So Yudhisthira is questioning this, and so Narada Muni, with a little complicated section we were finishing. Narada Muni says, actually, it's not that. This is all according to the gunas. Sometimes in sattva guna, the Lord behaves with a sattvic devotee, behaves in a sattvic way. In a rajasic devotee, behaves in a rajasic way. Tamasic devotee, tamasic way. Exactly, it's all according to his leelas within the gunas. So then in the process, he mentions, for an example of like Nrisinga, like Hiranya, just as he killed Hiranyakashipu and he saved Prahlad. This is example kind of given. So Yudhisthira asking, what is this Yudhisthira? What is this Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha and Prahlad? He didn't know these stories, or he didn't fully know the stories. Please explain them. So this is where we're picking up in mistake here. It's in Canto 7, actually, Skanda 7. In chapter 1, verse 33, Yudhisthira is asking. So Narada Muni says, a long time ago, actually he also starts a long time ago, and when the world was young, there was this young boy Prahlad, a very dear devotee. Although born a demon family, he was born a bhakta, a devotee, and his father tried to torture him, but couldn't hurt him. And eventually the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu. Everybody knows the story. Actually, it's very nice. We're coming in sometime in March, Narsingh Chaturdasi. Maybe 15th March or something, a couple of months from now. Actually, as we're reading through the story, we may get, hopefully, I'm hoping that it matches to the actual day when Nrisimhadev appeared. We'll get to that part in the story. And that there we're installing, we have a new deity, a new murti of Nrisimhadev. He's on the fireplace. Looking up right now, he's just there, not on this side, on the corner side, next to Chaitanya. Very beautiful, both fierce and beautiful form of Nrisimhadev. So we're hoping to do the Pranapratisthana on that day. So we're preparing, working our way to this auspicious day. So Narada mentions this. So Yudhisthira is now asking, who and what was the curse that could affect the servant of Hari? Oh, I have to back up a little bit. I'm forgetting where we left. In the story, Narada says, Yudhisthira questions, who was this Hiranyaksha and who was this Hiranyakashipu that was killed, these two great demons in ancient times? He said, actually, they were the gatekeepers in Vaikuntha, in the kingdom of God, in Vishnu's kingdom, Vishnu's heaven. They were Jaya and Vijaya, the two gatekeepers. If you go now, modern in most Vishnu temples, you have two deities at the outside. It's Jaya and Vijaya, your first asked with their permission, you enter. They're the gatekeepers of Vishnu's kingdom, of Vishnu's realm. And so they were cursed. Some the four Kumaras came, these sages came, and somehow or another they offended the sages, and the sages cursed them that you'll be born as befall from your position in heaven. So the question Yudhisthira is asking, it doesn't make sense. How could great devotees, such great, that they're the gatekeepers in the highest heaven, in the inner world, in the highest world, the inner realm, how could they be cursed? How could they fall down? This is a question he's asking. Who and what was this curse that could affect the servants of Hari? Devotees of God, the saints, how can curses no longer, this world of curses and blessings, that may have no meaning to them, they're living in union with God, how can they be affected? For it seems unbelievable, inconceivable, like he says, it's unthinkable to me, that those who are one-pointedly devoted to Hari, ekantinam, Hari ekantinam, that was complete focused mind, one-pointed mind, the gatekeepers of Hari are only thinking of Hari. Right, so how is it that it's inconceivable, somebody completely focused, they could have to take birth again? This is the question. Usually we have faith, we hope, that eventually we'll attain that realm where there's no more rebirth. How is it in union with God, in pure devotion of God, how can we again, it just seems inconceivable, you're telling me that such a person fell. Doesn't make sense. This is the question. He continues, those dwelling in the realm of Vaikuntha, Vaikunthapura, Vasinam, those who dwell, the residents of Vaikuntha, they have no body, they have no senses, they have no breath. How can they be in bondage? Right? Without it in the heavenly world, this is not heavenly world, we think in some religious thinking that our goal is to attain some heaven, right, and avoid hell. This is a very common in many conceptions. But this is not, Swami Vivekananda has a great line I love to quote. He says, never make heaven your goal, right? Because heaven, according to the scriptural understanding, the heavens are there. They're places of intense enjoyment that we get for extreme punya, extreme good activities, karma. And hell are also places of extreme suffering. We get the results of our negative karmas. But karmas, our actions, are temporary. And therefore they have a temporary limited result, not an eternal. A temporary action cannot lead to an infinite result, right? If I eat something bad, my health will be bad, but not forever, right? It passes, you know, with the effect, the cause and the effect have to be equal. A limited effect can't create an infinite, a limited cause can have an infinite effect. So this idea of the heavens, actually the swargas and things like this, and the narakas, these heavens and hell, these are not permanent abodes. Right, but Vaikuntha here in the text of Bhagavatam, this is a Vaishnava text where Vishnu is not only the personal God, he is the supreme Brahman. There's nothing beyond Vishnu in the conception of the Bhagavat. And so to be in Vaikuntha means to be in union with in that highest realm, the highest consciousness. So in that consciousness, there's no body, there's no body consciousness, there's no breath, there's no senses. The body and senses are what cause bondage. So he's asking, without body, without senses, and that liberated, they're liberated. How can a liberated person become in bondage? This is the question. Please explain. Narada, Sri Narada Uvacha, Narada Muni, the great sage, is speaking. Once upon a time, when the world was young, the sons of Brahma, Sanananda, and others happened to visit Vishnu Loka as they were traveling around the three worlds. Who are the sons of Brahma? Brahma, of course, were all children and grandchildren, great, 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 great grandchildren of Lord Brahma, the secondary creator. But it says in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first skanda, we read this story many years ago when we first started this text. It says that Brahma, he was given the instruction to populate, create this world and populate, and create people that will populate. You know, and the Bible says, be fruitful and multiply. Right, you had Adam and Eve. Now you have children and populate the earth. So Brahma, first thing he does, he creates four beautiful sons. Right, these are we call them the four Kumaras. Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanananda, and Sanat Kumar. And told them, you now go and have enter this world, have children, and create, populate the earth. But there, at that time, in the beginning of creation, there's mostly sattva-guna, not much rajas and tamas. So everything was very pure. And their minds also, they were born with extreme purity of mind. And so their mind, they couldn't bring their mind down to their body, to body level, to even admit they had a body, right? And they definitely weren't about to willingly enter any type of anything that they considered least bit bounding, limiting, right? And so they disobeyed their father, Lord Brahma, and they went off into the universe, just as they were born, completely. And it says that they were there, but they were like born rishis; they were born illumined. And it says that they remained always like little children of five. They never grew up, right? And they never wore clothes. They're kumaras, means little boys, right? They're the four kumaras. But looking like little boys, they're actually the most ancient. There's nobody older than the kumara except Brahma, right? Their father is these four sages, the sons of Brahma, what do? They simply, wherever they think they go, they simply wander. Like the original, they're the original sadhus, the original monks, the original sannyasis, right? Naga sannyasi, simply wandering naked without any body consciousness, without any worldly consciousness, without any limitations. And the Sri Ramakrishna described the nature of a Paramahansa, of the supremely awakened soul. He's like a child of five. He says, Sri Ramakrishna was described. He says, sometimes they behave like a ghoul, sometimes like an inert thing, like a statue, and sometimes like a child of five. These are the three modes of operation of a Paramahansa, right? So Sri Ramakrishna usually was in the child of five mode, right? Just behaving like an innocent child of five. It says he'd spontaneous, like a child, wandering without any limit, no idea of limitation. So once upon a time, the sons of Brahma and other, Sanananda and the others, happened to visit Vishnu Loka as they were traveling around the three worlds. Although more ancient than the most ancient, they appeared like boys of five or six, right? They're the oldest of the oldest, the most ancient, but they seem like little children. Dig vasaha, wearing the directions, right? Sometimes we say digambar is the most more common term, right? Closed in the directions, which means closed in space, right? But actually, this is a very deep thing, because not just closed in space, you can say it means not wearing anything, but closed in the directions, right? Thinking each direction, like this is east, this is south, this is south, right? So I'm looking south, right? What's the direct direction is infinite, right? So actually the Digambar, the Naga Baba, the Naga Sadhu, the Digambar, the naked saint, or this little boy, they're not, what is naked means, naked has two meanings. It has, one is that without covering and without, and exposed, has, you know, has two things, without covering and completely exposed, completely open. And here it always refers to Nagababas or Naga Sannyasis or the Digambara. My goodness. Jai Ganesh. You never know what's going to happen at Kali Mandir. Sri Ganapati. Jai Sri Ganeshaya Namaha. Another typical day at Kali Mandir. This is our joke here. Gorgeous. My goodness. My goodness. Beautiful. So it means, it doesn't just mean it's a naked boy or a naked man when you see a Naga. It means unfettered, an unfettered mind, right? Somebody without body consciousness, who has infinite consciousness, not without any limitation, right? So there is a sky-clad or one or unbound, unlimited, right? Although more ancient than the most ancient, they appeared like boys of five or six. Sky-clad, the two gatekeepers forbade them entrance, thinking them children. So this is where the story begins, right? These four sages come, and where they go, they're simply wandering, and they happen to come to the abode of Vishnu, the highest level of consciousness, and they get stopped at the door, right? Now, in this section, the seventh skanda, the story is told in just four or five verses. It's not elaborately told. This story, it's not elaborately told because it was elaborately told in the third skanda, which we read about 2 years ago, I think. And there, the story is that scene is pulled apart. It says that they arrived in the divine kingdom, in the divine realm, and they went through, as they entered that Vaikunthapura, the city of Vaikuntha, of heaven, or the heavenly divine abode, they had to pass through seven doors, seven gates, right? And the yogis, it could be obvious with the interpretation of this, we have seven chakras that you move step by step as consciousness becomes from the most gross, limited consciousness at the physical level in the base chakra and moving up bit by bit through the elements, earth, fire, water, air, space, like that. Each element becoming less and less bound, more and more liberated, right? Nothing's more bound than earth, the earth element. It's like everything's at its most gross, like this. And so when our consciousness is in the earth element, we call that in Muladhara, right? And so everything is, our consciousness is bound, right, in earth element. Then one higher is water element, the second chakra. Water is solid, but moving, right? But movable, right? If you squeeze water, this is the ancient way, it's not exactly scientific, but it's describing the elements this way, it heats, right? And so if you heat, then you have fire, which is more free than water. It's more dynamic, more energetic. More free than that is air. Air seems to be everywhere, but it's still something. And then above that is space. Space is everywhere, and it seems to be almost nothing. But it is something. Something's in space. Space is in something, right? So each element is correspondingly freer and freer and freer. So the yogis, ideally, we're supposed to move. Yogis do it consciously through the chakras, but as devotees, we naturally move, our consciousness becomes more and more refined, more and more free, more and more free, moving up the different gates into the heavenly realm, right? And it's just before they got to the seventh gate, in this third skanda it says, at the seventh gate, which is the top of the head where there's the complete union with God, they were stopped at the door by Jaya and Vijaya, right? Jaya and Vijaya, Jaya means victory. Victory, right? And so you can see, and Vijaya means supreme victory, right? Special victory. V is like absolute victory. Jaya and Vijaya, right? So these are, you can see, we do not doubt, we do not read, we do not take the text, these texts and stories to be just, oh, this is just metaphor. We take, these are very ancient stories, so they're in the realm of mythological stories. But it does not mean that these things did not happen. These are describing events or realities that are, we can't even conceive about. So whether or not four naked boys went to heaven and were stopped by two gatekeepers, that we don't know. The texts say like that. We have to understand the texts as they are. But yogis say go deeper into the text. It may or may not have happened, but it has to happen. This is us. We have to ascend. We have to move up. We have to become like these boys, right? Completely free, unfettered, touching the very gate of the absolute, right? To attain our supreme victory, Jaya and Vijaya. But Jaya and Vijaya is not easy. So it says that they stopped. They were not allowed to come in, thinking, oh, who are these? They're just little boys, not dressed properly anyways, right? And these little boys, what's the nature of a little boy? A little boy has no idea of what's theirs and what's not theirs, right? What's ours, what's mine, what's yours, right? And where they should go. And we put the sign that says, you know, private, don't enter, right? But that doesn't, they know how to read. And if they know how to read, they still don't, they don't have that idea of where you can go. There's nothing stopping them. They're free, right? You know, and so the idea of being thwarted, they simply want to go to God, and some people are stopping them, right? And they don't have that, little children don't have the mind. If you ever thwart the desire of a child, you know what happens. They get really angry. Right, something so actually innocent, you can't, in the material world, you can't find anything more innocent than a child. Parents also know children aren't maybe perfectly innocent, but in a different type of naughtiness perhaps is there. But even that most innocent child, without any real sense of boundary, without any sense of, even a really defiant sense of personal self or anything like that, if you thwart its desire, it will be angry. naturally. That's a little baby starts crying, right? So they became immediately angry, right? Actually, it says in the commentaries of this verse that it's because of this, because what happened, because they became angry and they cursed these gatekeepers, as this famous story is there. Therefore, whenever a sadhu comes to the door, you do not stop them, right? Here these sadhu saints came to the door and they were stopped. And so something bad happened, seemingly bad. So sadhus come to your door, Maharaj, you give some food, like that. People are a little scared because you never know what's going to happen with the sadhu, right? I personally can attest, sadhus are very dangerous beings. Never trust. You should always let them into your house and feed them, especially Chinese food. Very fun. Pretty sure that's somewhere in the scriptures that says like that. I'm pretty sure. Sadhus and children can always enter anybody's little children. You don't stop, you have a I remember I was in the airport I'm coming back from India, in the men's room, and so also little girls, little boys are both coming in with their parents, because you don't even think, they have no conception of men's room and ladies' room, right? So a child can go anywhere. A sadhu should be able to go anywhere without restriction. This is the idea, right? They, the four Kumaras, they became angry and cursed them. So this is, he's telling the story how they were cursed. What do they say? It says, you do not deserve to reside at the feet of Vishnu. Right? They became immediately angry. He said, you don't deserve to be at the highest heaven, right? Which is free from rajas and tamas. So this is this brings the gunas in, rajas, sattva, rajas and tamas. By Kunta, Vishnu is a devata of sattva, of purity, of goodness, of absolute, spotless peacefulness. When he says that you're stopping me shows that you're in ignorance, that you're seeing duality. And therefore, you don't deserve to be in this realm. You shall have to leave this realm. To imagine, they're not being allowed into heaven, and as a result, they're kicking them, the residents, the eternal residents of heaven, out of heaven. It's a very dangerous thing. So that's in this version, it's only one verse says like that. I'm cursing you. You don't deserve to be in heaven. You should have to leave. Where is it? You fools will soon be born in sinful and demonic wombs. You'll be born in demon families, in sinful families, right? So this is horrible. So the story is once again more elaborately told earlier. So I'm trying to remember as much as I can from that story. When that happened, the Jaya and Vijaya immediately realized, "Oh, we've made a mistake, right? These aren't regular children, right? The little Brahmana." He says that the curse of a Brahmana. Now, Brahmana has different meanings, of course. Brahmana means a knower. Brahman is a Brahmana, but here also these are not just sadhus but and sages. A knower is a Brahman, but they're also Brahmins. They're also in the Brahmana caste or varna. Holy men who are knowers of the Vedas and teachers of the Vedas. He says their words, because a real Brahman can't speak untruth. It's one of the signs of a Brahman. It says in the Gita that one of the qualities of a Brahman is he's honest, right? So a Brahman who tells a lie is not a Brahman. He's already fallen from his Brahman state, right? He cannot tell a lie. He's constitutionally incapable of telling a lie. Otherwise, you cannot be a Brahman. You can be born in a Brahman family. Actually, it's very bad manner. People say, I'm a Brahman. It's extremely bad etiquette. You say, I'm the son of a Brahmin, or I'm born in a Brahmin family, right? Because we're struggling to become trying to take these qualities. But a Brahmin, these little boys are Brahmins, not only by birth, but by children of Lord Brahma, but also by realization. And so their words, any word has to come true. If they say something's going to happen, it's going to happen. So they became very fearful, right? Oh my goodness, have we offended a sadhu? Have we offended these Brahmins, these little boys, who aren't little boys? And their words have to be fulfilled, right? So immediately you have to think, Jaya and Vijaya, they're eternal attendants of the Lord, and they're thinking we're gonna be kicked out. We're gonna fall. We're automatically, our minds gonna. What does it mean to fall from heaven? It means their mind is gonna become to the worldly line. Bit by bit, their consciousness will become more and more dense and enter worldly thinking. But they ask immediately a boon. Not told in the later verses. He says, you please bless us that even as we fall, that we don't forget God. This is very interesting. This is really the essence of this little lila, right? Even as we fall, don't let us forget God. Because our only, their only life is this union with God. That's there in union with God. Let us not forget him. So then, in the story, Lord Vishnu, he realizes inside what's going on out there, right? He hears some mischief, some sadhus have come. His doorkeepers didn't behave properly. Now everything's a big mess. He's losing his good attendance. So he appears, and it's a beautiful verse. In Sanskrit, it's a very beautiful verse. I'm forgetting, I didn't write it down, but it says that he who is usually only felt in the heart of a devotee, right, stood before them in their vision, right. So they immediately became ecstatic, seeing the one that they're already in union with God in their inner consciousness, but now in their open eyes they're seeing Narayan Vishnu appear before him. And so then they realized, and then Narayan, he said, Lord Vishnu says, please forgive. This is what I have done. He says, well, you haven't done nothing. You're God. He says, no, my servants have done the same as me doing. Right? It's the same. There's no difference between the servant and the master. If my servants misbehave, the same as I'm misbehaving. Right, he says, "You please forgive me." Right, and he gives him a huge eulogy, the glorifying the Brahmins. He says that describing how the devotees and the bhaktas and the Brahmins are the goal of everything. Even he himself, who's the goal of everybody and the Lord of everybody, he himself is devoted to the lotus feet of the devotees and the Brahmins. So how can he be offended? So then they said, "No. You can speak like that, but actually you're the supreme, right? And we've made a mistake because Jai and Vijay, these are great devotees." Right, we misunderstood. We became angry because our desire was thwarted innocently, right? And we've pronounced unthinkingly a curse to them. So you please forgive us. So both the Vishnus, the giant Vijay, is begging to forgiveness. Narayan's also begging forgiveness, and the four Kumaras are begging forgiveness. And then the four Kumaras also say, this cannot go without punishment. We've committed a great sin. We've cursed in our anger. We've cursed devotees. Not the devotees is the highest order, at the highest gate of heaven, the highest door, right? And therefore they say, also very beautiful, he says, if our mind goes down, if we even enter any... Right now we're living so pure, but eventually we may, because of this, we may also go to hell. We may also go to an incredibly worldly situation, right? If that happens, still you allow us to always think of you, right? Same prayer, right? This shows you that they're all great devotees. They prayed that if they go to hell for cursing the doorkeepers, that their hearts always remain focused on serving. Let us always remain focused upon serving your feet. Then he says, and may our words always be pleasing to you, right? Glorifying, being everything we speak, everything we say should only be an offering to you, right? So even if we're in a horrible situation, we're only thinking of you and we're only speaking beautiful words. He says, just like Tulsi, and he uses it, just like Tulsi, this holy basil, the most sacred of all plants. Tulsi has many qualities, right? It's medicinal, it's beautiful, it smells nice, it purifies the atmosphere. But all those but its real quality, Tulsi is at its perfection when it's offered to the Lord. You put it on Krishna's feet or on Shalagram. That's Tulsi's perfection. If you know the story, the history of Tulsi and the benefit of Tulsi. Otherwise, it's just a plant. There's many nice plants that smell good, that have medicinal qualities, like this. Tulsi's glory is that when it's offered to the Lord, it becomes glorious. That's perfect. Right? He says, so similarly, so many words are being spoken, right? We're sages, we should be only speaking. Even if we're in the worst situation, let us our words also be beautiful like Tulsi being offered to you. He says, and also let these ears only hear, always hear your glorification, your holy names, these stories, these divine things. This is a beautiful example. The sky, these ears are really small. They only hold so much sound. But the sky can hold any amount of sound, Right? You can sing, you can chant unlimited verses and praise and like glorifications, unlimited. Let our ears be like that, be like the sky, being able to absorb all divine sounds. This is our prayer. So even because of this, we may end up in a worldly situation due to this mistake, right? You commit some karma, all of a sudden things are different, right? All of a sudden you find yourself in a different situation you don't think is ideal for your spiritual life, right? They're worried. My situation, because of this action, our situation may change. But whatever our situation, may we always think of you, may our hearts be dedicated to you, may we speak, our words be pleasing to you, and may we hear only about you, right? So even if you go, so a devotee, says, is not fearful of hell, right? It's fearful of losing, forgetting God. You can be in heaven and forget God. What a horrible thing. That's what Swami Vivekananda says, why you should reject heaven, right? He says, Swami Vivekananda says in the discipleship lecture, he says, it would be better if there was no such thing as heaven. Right, he says, and our foolish little dreams would break sooner. Right, he says, they say there's much. He says, because in heaven there's so much enjoyment, you forget when you enjoy too much, you forget God. Right, so devotee, as long as you can remember God, heaven, hell, earth, America, India, school, ashram, whatever the situation is, no matter what situation I find myself in, let me not forget you. Let my words be only glorifying you. May I hear only about you. This is their prayer. Very beautiful. Then Lord Vishnu says, actually, it's my mistake, right? It's still my fault, right? He says, these servants of mine, he's a very beautiful verse. He says, actually, the Brahmana, the Dvijas, the twice born, the devotees, they're my rupa, they're my own self, right? He says, and that says that the devotees, the brahmanas, the saintly people, and the kshatriyas also, he says, and the cows, and the and helpless creature, helpless beings. He says these three, dvijas, cows, and helpless beings, are directly my forms. Anybody who hurts them is the same as hurting me. Right, and therefore, by these giant vijay insulting you, they've insulted me. So it's also a very interesting verse. It stuck in my mind. Okay. It says, "I love those who serve these, who serve the holy people, who serve the cows, and who serve innocent, helpless animals and people." Right? This pleases me. Right. And those who hurt them, no matter how clever, no matter how educated, I'm not pleased with them. Right? But then he says, actually, trying to remember the story. Then he turns, because the verses are in front of me, he turns and talks to Jayan Vijay. Then the four Kumaras leave. He says, please forgive us, everything's okay. And they mitigate the curse, which we'll hear. He says that you'll be born only three times and like this. But he turns, so the four Kumaras say, okay, we'll mitigate the curse. They'll be born as demons. I already cursed them, they'll be born demon families. But in three lives, they'll be purified and come back to your original state. They'll attain their state. That verse is coming. But when he leaves, then Narayana says to the four Kumara, to Jayan Vijay, he says, don't worry, right? It seems, this is very dramatic, they're all freaked out, we're about to be kicked out of heaven, right? We've offended the sages, now Vishnu's angry, saying that we've hurt himself. He says, actually it's not true, actually you're ever in union with me. Anybody who's attained this realm cannot fall, right? My devotee can never fall. That's what he uses this term. The Nagita also says, declare it boldly, O Arjuna. My devotee never falls, never perishes, right? I protect them. He says, once you're in union with me, you can never leave union with me, right? But you'll have to, because of something, this is my desire, you'll be born in this way. This is my lila, this is my play. So I was thinking, this is also our situation, right? We find ourselves in a material world, seemingly, right, in material situations, in material relationships, with some spiritual thinking, right? Thinking, oh, we've lost that original point. But once we've attained Vaikuntha, we can never leave. Once we attain union with God, we can never, once we're liberated, we can never become bound again. That was Yudhisthira's question, right? But where did we come from? Before our first birth, right? Who are we actually? We are that self which is boundless, that doesn't have, that's beyond. So actually we are in this Ketuva. We come from that realm. We live in that. We're actually liberated, right? We seem to be in this material world. Yes, we're saying actually this is just seeming. This is Vishnu saying actually those who are in union with me can never be separated from me. And if we come from God, we can never be separated from him, her, it, they, however you think, you know. It's impossible. So my Guruji, he says, I give you a challenge. You can dare God to make you separated from him. It's impossible. Right? It's impossible to be separated from him. It's impossible to be separated from God. Even for not only difficult, it's impossible to be separated from God for even a moment, right? But we forget. So both the Jaya and Vijaya and the four Kumaras are praying, no matter what our situation. Like the four Kumaras thinking, because of this, we may enter some materialist situation, even hell. But let us be devoted, let us not forget you. Right? And then Jaya and Vijaya, they're cursed to be born as demons, right? With demon consciousness. But they're also praying, let us not forget you. Right? So we find out the three demons, that the three sets of demons, they became obsessed with hatred for God. And that became their meditation. They never forgot God. Right? And that became their liberation. But they're always liberated. That's the point. That's the story. It's exactly, my devotee is always in union with me. They can never, once you're in Vaikuntha, you can never fall. And if we come from that realm, we can never actually leave that realm. We've never actually left that realm. This is the esoteric understanding of this text from my limited understanding. Where are we here? Thus cursed and falling from their... they, the sons of Brahma, became angry and cursed him. You do not deserve to reside at the feet of Vishnu, which is free from rajas and tamas. You fools who shall soon be born in sinful and demonic wounds. Thus cursed and falling from their abode, the merciful sages spoke to them, saying, after three births, you will again regain your original status. Right? This is a quick form. Actually, they became the compassionate sages that cursed them to leave heaven. It's skipping the intermediary thing of Vishnu speaking to them and their realization. Then they mitigated the person. But as they're falling, they say, don't worry, in three births you'll again, only three births. If we knew we only had three more births, there's other texts and traditions that say that they're given an option, right? You can be like, you know, 10 births as a great devotee, I forget the exact option, or three births as demons, and you need to come back. So three births as demons. Because then we have conscious union with the Lord quicker, right? Actually, there's a great line in St. Augustine's Confession. It's like, if you go to sin, sin was gusto, right? A good demon is better than a wishy-washy devotee, you know? It's like full life, you know? Also, Jesus has a great, in Jesus' mouth, I think it's from a vision, the book Revelation or something, Jesus says, it's supposed to say, because you're neither hot nor cold, I shall spit you from my mouth. Right? I don't, you know, you have to be something. Do something. Right? At least at least be bad, but don't be wishy-washy. We're wishy-washy devotees, not even good demons. Right? I remember years ago, I was walking with Abbot George and our Christian monks at the Ratha Yatra in Venice Beach. And beautiful, the devotees are chanting very nicely. And out of some stores, this satanic stores, it's like, horrible smells coming out of it, all black and skulls and death metal and all satanic, like, and pentagrams and coming, glow-in-the-dark pentagrams and all these, like, evil incantations. And Abbot George looks up and goes, oh, fiddlesticks, he says, fake evil. And he walks away. It's not even real evil. It's like a show. It's like, it's not even, if it's real evil, he'd do the sign of the cross or do something to fight it. You know, he's divided. He's not even, it's like, ah, just dismissed it. You know, not even good evil. But they were born as good evil demons, really good demons. We'll read about them. But he says, the two were born as the sons of Diti. This is the first incarnation, as Hiranyakashipu, the elder Hiranyakashipu, and the younger Hiranyaksha. They were worshipped by the Daitas and Danavas. Daitas and Danavas are two classes of demonic beings in the ancient world. Hari, Vishnu, killed Hiranyakashipu, assuming the form of a lion. This is that great Narasimha, Narasimha. And Hiranyaksha was killed assuming the form by Vishnu, who assumed the form of a boar, lifting the earth. So he's just quickly mentioning these characters. Hiranyakashipu tried to torture and kill his son Prahlada, who was very dear to Keshava, Keshava Priya. Keshava Priyam. But he was not able to kill him. Who knew this? Why was he not able to kill Prahlad? Because he knew this. He knew the self within all beings. He had, he says, where is it? Sama darshanam. He had equal vision, right? And Bhagavat tejas spristam. He was beaming with divine power, with God's power. So he was nothing could touch him. He had, why? Because he knew the self of all beings. He saw everything equally. He saw the self was, he knew about this. He knew the self of all beings, saw the self of all beings, and because of that, he was permeated with divine power. So Hiranyakashipu could never torture, could never kill him. Then, so that's quickly mentioning that incarnation. Then they were born as demons in the womb of Keshini, as a son of Vishwara, giving agony to all the worlds as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. This is the next incarnation. Ravana, who Lord Ram killed, and his Ravana had three brothers, right? Two brothers, Kumbhakarna and Vibhishana. And so Kumbhakarna, they also described that these are the three gunas. Yogis give interpretation that Kumbhakarna was purita. He slept most of the year, and the rest of the year, when he wasn't sleeping, he was eating. His only thing, he ate and slept, like some swamis I know. Yeah. Chinese food, especially after all the Chinese food. Right, this is tamaguna, right? And then Ravana represents rajaguna, desire and passion, right? And name and fame like that. And Vibhishana, right? He was sattvaguna, he was a devotee, pure soul. So he was born, so their second birth, they were killed as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, two incarnations killed. Then as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, they were killed by Lord Ram. So then manifesting as a lord of Raghus, Ram, he killed them in order to free them from the curse. You will hear of the valor of Ram, Ram Viriam, from the lips of Markandeya later, O my lord. So that's, he says that, I'm not telling that story, you'll hear that story, and we'll read it later on, that you'll hear about that story later. In the third incarnation, third birth, now, in this present time, Yudhisthira, during Yudhisthira's own life, born as the sons of your mother's sister, as cousins, as their cousins, right? They have been freed from their curse by being struck by Krishna's disc, which destroys sin. This is what's Yudhisthira's cousins? They were... No. Duryodhana and... I should have written it down. I had it in my study this morning. Anyways, there first actually some texts, some people come in belief, and I've also preached like this, and I've read like this. They were born as Kamsa and Charuna, but that's not what the Bhagavatam says. These like two other. I should have written. I don't have it in front of me. Ah, Shishupala and actually maybe I have it here. Hold on. Sorry, we should know. I don't know. Shishupala is one of them. What's Shishupala's brother? Anyways, it's okay. Anyways, we'll hear about, that's also another story where Krishna will then come and kill them. This is curse, and they were finally free from the curse by being struck by Krishna's disc, which destroys sin. So actually, each one of these births, each being killed by first Nrisimhadev Varaha avatar, then by Lord Ram, then by Lord Krishna, each one purified them more and more, right? Their consciousness again purified, right? And each one behaved differently. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, these are very crude demons, right? And then they're a little more, each one's more and more refined. The final, the disc, actually, it said they absorbed in Krishna's body. When they absorbed in Krishna's body, it's the same, they immediately were born. As soon as they were killed by, they're cut by Krishna's disc, they were completely, they were in the story code, they were absorbed, they disappeared into his body. but disappearing, being one with God immediately, that is Vaikuntha. That is that the highest realization. They attain their state again, right? He says, by intense meditation on Hari, right? Dhyana, achyuta, sama, by intense meditation on Hari through focused hatred, right? This is their meditation. Through focused hatred, they became absorbed in achyuta, in that Lord, and regained their place near Hari as Vishnu's attendants. They again attained their original position, right? Which they've never actually lost, but the point is that even if you meditate on God, no matter how you meditate on God, but it says in, Krishna says in the Gita, however men approach me, I respond in kind. So if you want to, if you approach God as a devotee, he responds as a devotee. If you approach God as your child, he responds as your child. As your mother, she becomes your mother. As your chastising father becomes your chastising, judging father. However you approach, he responds, right? As a friend, he becomes friend. As a lover, like the gopis, he becomes your lover, right? As just the absolute truth, like the rishis, they attain that. God can be realized that way, right? Also, as non-existent, then God disappears. You don't believe? That's okay. However we want to approach, he responds, right? But here you respond if you want an enemy. God, he's a perfect enemy. If you want to fight, he's the best fighter, right? And some of the texts say, actually, Vishnu, what is his play? Vishnu also wants to fight. God also wants some activity. Who can fight with Vishnu? Right? Who can fight with God? Only somebody like him. Somebody very close, right? But in order to do it, if somebody's fighting but letting you win, that's no good, right? You should be able, God will win, that's no doubt, right? But you shouldn't. But if I want to wrestle with somebody and you're gonna let me win, there's no fun in that. You should want to beat me. You should be angry with me. I mean, try to be, but still, I'm good. I should at the end should let me win. If anybody want to wrestle me, but you should give some fight, right? So if God wants to fight, so Jaya and Vijaya, we forget to mention Jaya and Vijaya look just like Vishnu, right? They're also blue, have four arms, conch disc, same necklace, all the signs. They're two Vishnus outside Vishnu's door. Right, they're just like Vishnu. Everybody in Vishnu's kingdom is just like Vishnu. That's one of the type of mukti, is a form just like Vishnu. Means we're just like God, right? So God wants to fight only with something with just like him, his own self, another reflection, like that. So this is another lila. So he says, by this meditation of intense hatred on me, then I they immediately that all their impurities were destroyed, and so as the devotees I think it may be best for us not to try this type of devotion, right? To become an enemy of God, right? But if we're an enemy of God and we want to fight God, great. God will win, guaranteed. God, in every story, God always wins, right? One devotee I know, he says that, I'm fighting with Ma. And he says, well, you should just surrender because you've read all the scriptures. Nobody's ever fought with Ma and won. Ma always wins. Just surrender. That's the easier thing. But one saint told me, if you surrender, when is it okay to surrender? When you're surrounded, right? If you surrender before you're surrounded, that's called treason. Not treason. It's not a good. What's the term? I think treason or something like that. Or you, you don't surrender your position until you're completely defeated. Until then, you fight, right? So you surrender when you're surrounded. So Yudhisthira then asks another question. He says, "You've mentioned what? Now you've brought up another. You to answer my question. You didn't answer my question. So more questions have come." He says, "How is it that he, Hiranyakashipu, had such hatred for his dear son? You mentioned that Hiranyakashipu hated his son, who was a great devotee. How could anybody hate their son? And that if that son's also like a divine being, a devotee, how did he become a devotee? How could the father hate his beloved son, Priya?" Who was a great soul, who was a Mahatma at that. And, O Lord, how did Prahlad become so attached to Achyuta, to Lord Vishnu? Narada says, when his brother was killed by Hari in the form of a boar, Hiranyakashipu became overwhelmed with anger and grief, O King. Now here also this story is told in the third skanda. And I'll tell it in just extreme brief form, just for reference. These two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, were born to Diti. And Hiranyaksha his first thing to do, once he came a little, came of age, became a little strong, he grabbed the earth, right, in the story, and plunged into the causal ocean, to the underworld, and stole the earth and took it down to the lowest, densest realm, right? And so what to do, this is not a acceptable situation. And to the Lord, he said that Hari became a unique incarnation that was like a boar, a pig, took a pig body, a boar body, and dived into the ocean, gave a good fight, and killed Hiranyaksha, and then on his tusks he carried the earth and put her back in her spot, right? And the only people that can carry a woman is a husband. Even now, a sign of marriage, the husband carries a woman over the doorstep, right? Even I think even after honeymoon or something like that, there's something like that, I think, that you carry the wife over the threshold. That's a sign of marriage, actually. So when Hari carried the earth became automatic. That was the same as marriage. So that's why Bhudevi, the earth, is one of the wives. Vishnu has two wives, Lakshmi and Bhudevi, right? His two wives. So this is from this. Because he picked her up. And so that's like that. And Hiranyaksha, this is a very complicated story we told some years ago. But Hiranyaksha, what does that mean? These demons have to have symbolic meaning. So Hiran means gold. And Aksha, eyes, right? So it means he's lusting after money, wealth, right? And what's more valuable? And you can see what you do when you try to manipulate and exploit the earth, take the earth and use it, try to enjoy it, right? As its master. But Vishnu is its God, its master, not any lustful. So this is one thing. This is one crude thing that comes in the ego, or as the ego comes in a very crude form, is this lust for money. Right, crude, gross, wanting to steal and manipulate and take yourself. So that in that gross form, the Lord comes in also an equally inappropriate. However you come, I respond in kind. So we want to think like that, right? And like a pig trying to steal in the low. It's like what it says actually. Pigs are actually very intelligent. They're more intelligent than dogs. Higher IQs, easier to train, right? But somebody was just telling me. Who was telling me? Were you telling me? Who was telling? Maybe Prakash was telling me that pigs are, from what I understand, they're like anatomically unable to look up. The way their spine, they can never look at the. They never see the sky. Right, so intelligent, but they can never look up. Right, that's why it's considered a very low consciousness. Is low intelligence. Consciousness is your level of consciousness has nothing to do with your intelligence. Right, they can be very intelligent, more intelligent than dogs and cats, which are very intelligent. Comparison, right? But they can never look up. And what are they doing? In India, you see they're in the gutters, eating not only garbage, and excrement is what they eat, right? So this is that type of thinking. Of just like, even if they grab the earth, they want to immediately put it in the lowest possible place, in some dirty place, and then in the lower regions of the hellish parts of the ocean, of the cosmic ocean in the mythology. And so the Lord comes in an equally place, in equal form, kills and liberates them. So the next demon, his brother, his older brother, becomes really angry. How dare he? And his name, Hiranyakashipu. We'll read elaborately his story as the weeks go by. Hiranyakashipu has another meaning. Hiranya, again, gold. And Hiranyakashipu means he who loves gold and soft bed. Right? So this is actually what this means. Means lust and greed. Money and sex. This is the next, another development of the mind, right? And so his love, his eyes, his obsession with money has been thwarted. And so he gives a leash to rage, right? How dare like this? And so this is, he says, when his brother was killed, Hari in the form of a boar, Hiranyakashipu became overwhelmed with anger and grief. O king, full of anger, biting his lips, eyes blazing with fury, looking at the smoke-filled sky, terrible with terrible teeth, fierce glance, and frowning eyebrows. His face was terrible to behold. Lifting his trident, he spoke to his demon hordes. Right? O Danavas, O Daitas, these are different, O demons, all, this can, each one of these category of demons we can go into later has a symbolic meaning, also different aspects of our kind of unregenerated qualities. O Dvimurda, O Traksha, O Shambara, O Sattabahu, O Hayagriva, O Namuchi, O Pataka, O Ilvala, O Viprachita, O Pulama, O Shankuna, and others, listen to my words and do what I command without delay. My unworthy enemies caused the death of my dear brother. Who are these enemies? The devas, right? The devas, they're weak. They've done this by trickery, right? They've caused the death of my dear brother, who is my well-wisher, right? This is Suhrit, who's has only good feelings for me. He's my beloved, right? By unfair means, Hari, who is equal to all. This is the answer to the question. Hari is actually equal to all, but he has been placated by the offerings of the gods. The gods, you can give candy to a child, and the child will go do what you want. Although the child, this is really thinking, Hari is innocent, but these gods, they've tricked Hari and they haven't killed my brother. This is his accusation. He has given up his own nature of being impartial and is behaving like a jungle animal, being influenced by flattery, just like a restless child. I will not find peace until I have cut his neck with my spear and appeased my brother who loves blood with offerings of his blood. So then he says, I will kill Hari. And I will not be happy until I cut off his head, as if that's possible, and feed his blood to my brother. And my brother, very, very fond of blood, right? He's that demonic quality of wanting meat and blood. He says, when the root of a tree, actually he says, Vasana Vanas Patu, means the lord of the forest, which is the lord of the forest, the king of the forest is trees, the greatest creature. When the root of a tree is cut, all the branches automatically dry. Right? So similarly, when the devas, the gods, whose very life is Vishnu, right, when he is cut, right, they will also, our deceitful enemy will be finished. Right? By killing Vishnu, we'll kill all the gods. They'll have no power. This is his plan. I shall devise a plan to kill God, and then all my real enemies, these devas, they're the ones who cause this problem. The divine beings, like my counterparts, they'll perish automatically. So now his plan: you all go to Earth, and this Earth, again, this same Earth, the prosperity of the Earth depends upon the activities of the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. So the Brahmanas, by their Vedic sacrifice, they're making everything run, and the Kshatriyas are protecting everybody, right? And ministering. He says, by their proper administration, the earth is very prosperous. Right? Destroy everyone who is engaged in austerity, sacrifice, study, vows, and charity. Right. So it's interesting. So he says, how do you get to God? Through Vishnu. How do you get to the Vishnu? How do you get Vishnu? Through holy activities, sattvic activities. So Brahmachatra, tapo yajna swadhyaya vrata dhaninam, through austerities, yajna, sacrifice, swadhyaya, sacred study, Vedic study, vrata, vows, and dhaniya, and charity. Right? Anywhere you see this, kill those people. Then Vishnu will have to come and fight me. Will ruin him. Vishnu has his roots in the activities of the Dvija, the twice born, the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. Right? His form is sacrifice and dharma. So it's like, this is very deep. This demon has very good knowledge, right? Knowing God's, he has his very foundation, our connection to him is through noble, these holy activities, right? His form is sacrifice, yajna, and dharma, and righteousness, right? He is the shelter of the devas, of sages, deva, rishi, pitri, bhutanam. Devas, sages, ancestors, and all other beings, and the goal of dharma. Right? So then he gives full instruction. Wherever there are twice borns, and wherever there are protected cows, Vedic culture, observance of varna and ashram, set fire to that city and cut down the trees. This is his instruction. This is going on daily. This is because actually it's people's lust for it's actually lust and greed that's causing everything, all the problems. This is going on all the time. And he says, protected cows. I mean, so many cows, there's many cows, there's millions of cows, but they're being raised only for slaughter. So that's not what is meant here. When you see people lovingly serving Gomata, there you go and you destroy that place, right? Wherever there are twice-born protected cows, Vedic, the Vedas, observance of Varna and Ashram, set fire to Sankirtan the trees, thus receiving their master's command respectfully on their heads, right? They, the demons, who were very fond of oppressing others, began to persecute the population. Right. This is a verse in the 16th chapter of the Gita. It describes that the quality of this demonic way of thinking. Right. It says that we engage a demonic thinking, a human being, our quality, when we engage, we know neither what is to be done or what is not to be done, and we engage in horrible works meant to destroy the world. As it is described, is that we, due to unbounded lust and greed, see, we have lust and greed. Actually, dharma kama, artha and kama are two legitimate goals of life, but within limitations, right? Unbounded lust and greed lead to destruction of everything. So, hearing this, they became extremely happy, right? They love to do this, right? They set fires to cities, villages, pastures, gardens, fields, forests, ashrams, mines, farming communities, mountain tribes, cowherds, and palaces. Right. So they set fire to everything. And you can see this is in warfare, this is what we do. Right. In Vedic times, it says, actually, it says in the Vedas, the rules for warfare are very, very restricted. Right. But actually, there's independent writings from travelers like that. They would see a war going on. And next to the field, next to the war, people would be tending their cows and gathering rice, right? Because nobody would ever think of killing a non-combatant, of burning down a field, of killing a cow, or burning out a temple. It was unheard of. Now it's the first thing you do. You have to destroy the food supply. You have to destroy their sacred places or libraries. You know, like, this is the first thing you do. This is a demonic way of thinking. This is not a righteous, if there's a thing as a righteous war, but this is... This is definitely not the way it is. They set fire to cities, villages, pastures, gardens, fields, forests, ashrams, mines, farming communities, mountain tribes, and cowherds and palaces. With picks, they demolished bridges, protective walls, and city gates. This we also do. Yeah, knock out the bridges, right? Taking axes in their hand, they cut down trees that provided livelihood. This means actually fruit trees, right? Actually, it's forbidden in the Vedic tradition. It's very difficult to cut down a living tree. You can, right? If the purpose is a glorification of Vishnu, right? So, like, for instance, to build a temple, we need wood, you need like this, you know, to also, how many trees are cut down for just stupid novels and stupid and useless newspapers and like this? It's not a valuable thing, right? It's a different thing if it's being used in glorification. Still, we should be carefully, but to cut down a tree without reason, or not without a good reason, with a selfish reason, is considered a sin in the Vedic tradition, and especially a fruit-bearing tree. Fruit-bearing trees are, you cannot cut down a fruit-bearing tree that's still giving fruit. While others burn down homes, the homes of the people with torches. The people being thus tortured by the followers of the demon king, the devas left the divine realms and wandered the earth unseen. This is where we leave until next week. What they did when this happened, the devas, they began, they themselves entered the earth unnoticed by the demons and began to think, what can we do? Right? So they come up with a plan. And that we find out the plan as we continue. So anyway, thank you for your kind attention. It's a little bit of a long section, but I'm very fond of this story. And now this is our build up to what happens, you know. Next week, Hiranya